Yo, it's Jey Uso from WWE.
And I'm Jimmy Uso.
Chumba Casino and WWE are hyped for the biggest event of the summer. SummerSlam.
I know, I can't wait.
There's nothing better to do while we're waiting.
Than playing Chumba Casino.
Sign up today and you could win a VIP experience.
With Chumba Casino and WWE for SummerSlam.
So what are you waiting for?
Play Chumba Casino and enter for your chance to win.
Let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See T's and C's. 21 plus. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
Hey y'all, Poodle and Maddie here from Reality Gaze. Grab your favorite thong because for the first time, we're heading to the villa for the new season of Love Island USA.
I can't wait to watch Ariana babysit these shiny, oiled up adults who I'm pretty sure aren't there for the right reasons.
From the home-wrecking bombshells to the absolute wreckage of movie night.
Pull up a daybed and join us every Wednesday for all the Love Island USA drama.
Find Reality Gaze wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey, everybody. Welcome into another edition of the Sal Sports and Stuff podcast, an AFC championship game edition. I mean, how are we liking it right now, Bills Mafia? Feeling good? I mean, it's the first time since 1993 the Buffalo Bills have been in the AFC championship game. And as ironic, coincidentally, I always mix up those two words. Whatever it is, it's against the same team they played then, the Kansas City Chiefs. Remember back then it was going to their last of the four straight Super Bowl run. Well, Bills fans now, of course, hoping that this is the start of something very special. But to do that, they're going to have to get through the reigning world champions and a team that beat them back in week six. And that, of course, is the Kansas City Chiefs and Patrick Mahomes. A friend of mine from college. No, not the guy that just got elected to the White House, but he's a president in his own right. And that is Seren Petro, host of the program, 810 WHB. Hey, we got a Syracuse guy in the White House. Can we get Jimmy Boeheim's wins back now, buddy?
Yeah, don't even get started there. I'm definitely all for that. It is nice to have a Syracuse guy, our first, right? As far as I know, we've never had any kind of presidential claim. Grad degree, if people are wondering. I thought the president went to Delaware. He did, but graduate degree. At Syracuse. So, we'll claim some presidential, perfume on the university now. Absolutely. But I do want to make clear, I thought it sounded a little bit like you and I might have been classmates of Joe Biden. We may be old, but we were not there when Joe Biden was there. We're much younger than President Biden. So, good times all around. Hopefully good times for the country moving forward. And good times to have Chiefs and Bills back together, man. I remember that. That 94, January of 94, end of the 93 season AFC championship game. And for a long time, that was the only glory there was to talk about in Kansas City when it came to football.
Yeah. And, you know, the Bills fans have made a big mistake. A lot of them keep telling me, oh, so after Phillip Rivers retired, they're like, you know, Phillip Rivers played his last game against the Bills. So did Joe Montana. I'm like, no, Montana played one more year, right? Seren, you remember that final year? Because it wasn't that year. He hung on one more year after that.
Yeah, he did. He had a 2-year deal with the Chiefs. 93 was the better year. They came back, went 9-7, and then lost in the playoffs. They got into the playoffs at 9-7, and maybe it was 10-6. I thought it was 9-7. Anyway, and lost in the playoffs. And then that was it. Very unceremonious. Montana battled injuries a lot that next year. And so, the highlight of the Montana Marcus Allen era was that 93 team that improbably. They won on a comeback. They got a touchdown late to beat the Steelers at home, or maybe it was the Raiders. I get those 2 years mixed up. Anyway, that until the Chiefs won in Houston in 2015 were their last playoff wins of any kind. And they hadn't won at home at Arrowhead until 2018 when Patrick Mahomes came since that like 93, 94 range. But yeah, and then went down, beat Buddy Ryan and the Houston Oilers to get to the Buffalo Bills. And, you know, there was real optimism here. In reality, they'd gone further than they probably deserved. The Oilers were really the class of the AFC that year, and the Chiefs did a great job knocking them off, but they ran into a buzzsaw on the Bills that day. Of course, Montana got knocked out. A lot of people say, well, what if Montana didn't get knocked out? What if Kimball Anders didn't drop the throw in the end zone? You know, it could have been a different game. I don't know. Maybe it could have. I think it would have been like the same stuff I'm hearing from Browns fans about, what if they'd called helmet to helmet?
Right.
At the end of the day, you know this more than anybody, Sal. Good teams find a way to win close games. Bad teams find a way to lose close games. Chiefs have been doing it all year. They would have found a way to win.
It's a great launching point for what I'm about to ask you because, you know, a lot of Bills fans are wondering, how come the Chiefs have played so many close games? And, you know, one of the things that, you know, I say is, I'm not saying they're disinterested necessarily, but they know what they need to do to win every game. Every game has its own DNA. The object isn't to blow teams out by 30. The object is to win every game. And that's what they keep doing, of course, short of the game against the Raiders and then the finale that didn't mean anything. But why have they played so many close games? Why aren't they pulling away from teams?
You know, I think there's two schools of thought, and history is going to pick one based upon how they finish this game or next two games, if they're fortunate enough to beat the Buffalo Bills. I think one is that this is a team that for the first time is finding out what it means to be a defending champion. I can tell you, I've never covered a defending Super Bowl champion until this year, and I think it is different. You do have the target. You do have the bullseye. Everybody's gunning for you. And so, and you have a shorter off season. You know, they didn't get to the off season until about, you know, February 10th or 11th. By the time you go through parades and TV shows and everything, it's a shorter off season. Then they've had to deal like everybody else. I think every team is worn down now from going through all the pandemic protocols. So it's been a very taxing season. And I think if the Bills beat them and maybe even win by double digits or something like that, I will look back and say this was a tired team that gave everything it had, but it's really hard to put back-to-back championship seasons together. Everything that goes in to doing it, and they just ran out of gas and ran into a very good Buffalo Bills team, right? Not to take anything away from the Bills, but I think that'll be the narrative from Kansas City's viewpoint. I think, you know, if that's how it goes, that'll be what we think. And I think the other one is exactly what you said, Sal. You know, in the past, when you're trying to make your name, trying to validate who you are, trying to prove that you're a championship caliber club, you can only do that once you get to and then win the Super Bowl. In the days and weeks and games leading up to it, every game you're trying to prove that you're a championship team. And that means, you know, I think when you get somebody down, you keep trying to put them down to show that we're not just a little bit better, we're way better. We're the best team. We can win this championship. But I think you do it not really to prove it to other people, to prove it to yourself that we're good enough to win. And I think, you know, I've seen teams, you know, even Dick Vermeil's teams offensively, if they had a day, man, they were going to have a day. And I think it was they were trying to validate to themselves that they were good enough to win it all. And so that is now gone. I mean, this team, it's the run it back tour is what they've called it. They brought back 20 of 22 starters from last year's team. And even brought one of those back and signing Stefan Wisniewski off the waiver wire. So really like 21 of 22 starters back for this team from last year's club. And so, you know, they don't have that need when they get up and they feel like the game is won. Then the job has been accomplished. And I think they do kind of let down a little bit late in games. I think the hope is that will change in the playoffs. They didn't get a chance to do that because Patrick Mahomes went down against the Browns. But, you know, in a lot of those games, they won 10 in a row before they mailed in the final game. The last seven were by 6 points or less. If you go back and look, you'll find a lot of double-digit leads and some big mm-hmm. double-digit leads in those games that were close. Some with, oh, by the way, touchdowns. Some with touchdowns that meant that they had to get some first downs to finish it. The Dolphins game comes to mind. The Bucks game was like that, where they closed it up a little bit closer than probably the fans would have liked. But always having the ability to do what they needed to do to get the win. So, you know, I think they're a mix of both of those things, a little bit worn down, a little bit tired. But also a team that doesn't feel like they have anything to prove. And so when they get the win, it's on to the next one, because ultimately what's going to measure this season as either a success or failure is only one game. Everything will be a failure unless they win the Super Bowl or at least get back to the Super Bowl. That's what it's all about. And I think there are times that they do set the game plan, set the effort, set the emotion on the shelf when they feel like they've got the game in hand.
Obviously, the big news this week is Patrick Mahomes, and I don't think anybody doesn't expect him to play at this point. You know, eventually he'll clear the protocols. He can practice all week. But I am a little wondering about the toe as well. So if you can kind of touch on both issues and where you think this is going, because, you know, he seemed like he was hobbling pretty good on that thing. We'll see where it goes. But I expect the Bills maybe to at least test to see if he can move around back there as effectively as he normally does.
Yeah, Andy Reid was asked about the toe. You know, obviously all the questions were about the concussions initially, but then he got hit with, you know, he was, you know, limping around pretty good. You know, how's the toe? And he gave his, yeah, it's fine. So what does that tell me? It's not fine. It's definitely a problem. That's Andy Reid when he wants to give no credence to something that is clearly an issue. And I think the toe will be an issue. In fact, I think the toe will be an issue until, you know, he can have a long rest. I mean, turf toe is something that, you know, puts running backs on the sideline. They just can't play through it. And if you watch the game, you saw how much pain he was in. It's a very painful injury. It's not one that takes you off your feet. It's one that'll take a running back, you know, out of the game. But Patrick Mahomes is arm first, leg second. Now, he's still scooted around pretty good. I'd say he looked like he was 85-90% of his ability to run. And for the most part, other than the play that ultimately got him knocked out of the game, whether it was a concussion or a choking or a hit a blow to a nerve. There are all these theories and things that the Chiefs are floating to try to avoid the concussion side of things, but they didn't. He's in the concussion protocol. For the most part, he can do what he needs to do and still be fairly elusive. He won't be as elusive. And I think that's the pick your poison for the Buffalo Bills, because he is by far, in all the metrics, the best in the league when it comes to beating the blitz, right? He'll do it with his arm. If there's receivers there, he'll buy time and beat you then later with his arm off schedule. As the play starts to break down, the Chiefs receivers are well-schooled in what they're supposed to do after the routes have been run and the play's still been kept alive by his legs. He'll lose some of that, and then he will beat you with his legs. He'll run for first downs, and he'll lose some of that as well. So the job definitely gets easier for the Buffalo Bills when he loses some of that mobility, but I wouldn't count on him being Tom Brady or Peyton Manning, sitting duck type of quarterback. I think he'll still have some mobility, but I think there's no doubt that that toe will be an issue for as long as the Chiefs remain alive in the playoffs.
Clyde Edwards-Helaire, he's been banged up. He's missed a little bit of time. Sammy Watkins, he didn't play in the first meeting against the Bills. We all know Helaire did. He obviously had that big monster game. What do you think, and what did you read on the situation with those two players in particularly?
So both of them back at practice yesterday, but the Wednesday practice is one that you'll see a lot of guys give a try to, because it's much more of just going through the motion. Thursday is the real practice where you really have to make it happen. And so today, the Thursday practice is the big one. As of Wednesday, they were both in practice. Clyde Edwards-Helaire, I'd be a little bit more optimistic about, because he gave it a go last Wednesday. Then they shut him down Thursday and Friday. But if they put him in last Wednesday, they thought there was a chance for Sunday, or they at least thought they could knock off a lot of the rust and look ahead to the following week. I think based on that, based on the fact that they gave it a shot last week, makes me think that they've got a decent chance to get him back. They need him back. Darrell Williams is a running back that, you love to have as a backup, because he kind of knows who he is, right? There's a hunger there and a want to do the little things to stay on the roster. He knows by now in his career that he's not going to lead the league in rushing, that what he does is pick up the blitz, be assignment sound, catch the football when it's thrown to you, and get every inch that's given to you and whatever more you can get by just going straight down the field. He doesn't try to get too cute. Ball security is important. He knows he's got to do the little things to be on this roster, and that creates a very effective running back when you've got a great passing attack, right? All he has to do is be a really good changeup. He doesn't have to be the fastball, and he knows it. So they can be very effective with Darrell Williams. He does still present, and he runs tough. He runs physically. And so he is still a threat. He makes the running game still a threat for the Kansas City Chiefs. Clyde Edwards-Helaire is the guy that takes 4 and makes it 15, takes 15 and makes it 30. He's not really a go-the-distance guy, because the pure straight-line speed isn't there. But you saw it in that game, that first game, just how elusive he is, how tough he is, how great his balance is. Arms are not going to bring him down. You're going to have to get a couple of helmets on the guy if you're going to bring him down. And so that will be really big for the Chiefs if the Bills want to roll it back and say, hey, we're taking the top away. You're not getting anything over the top. Clyde Edwards-Helaire will be a big boost. But make no doubt about it, the Chiefs were up 19-3, 19-10 when Patrick Mahomes went down. And I think well on their way to getting to 33, 36 points against the Cleveland Browns had they not lost Patrick Mahomes. So they can still put big totals up, and there was no Sammy Watkins last week either. So they can still put big totals up and have plenty of weapons, even if they don't have those guys. But it is, I'm glad you brought it up, because a lot of people here in Kansas City, every time someone goes down, they think it just doesn't matter, right? Because the Chiefs find a way to get it done. Eventually you take on more injuries than you can handle. It's a death by 1,000 cuts. And I think that's, where the Chiefs might find themselves. Because on the other side of the ball, Rashad Fenton was out last week. He practiced, and then Bashaud Breeland's in the concussion protocol as well. So their depth of corners has been tested. So if the defense is giving up more than they've given up, they played great against Atlanta in the last game. They tried allowing only 14 points, and then I think played really well against the Browns and giving up 17 points to them. If you're now giving up 24 and 30 and 31, you're putting more pressure on the offense to stay out in front. So they do have their share of injuries, and we'll see if that ends up being what drags them down here against the Bills.
Should we even pretend to know what's going on with Sammy Watkins' mind or body? You never know, right?
No, it's interesting, because there were stats coming into this year. Now we haven't run them this year, but how much better the Chiefs were when he played. And, you know, you can look back at his stats over the last couple of years, and it's not going to be because of his production, because there's nothing in those numbers that will really wow you. He blocks really well. Their yards per carry, it's amazing how much higher it was coming into this year when they had him versus when they didn't. But he is a guy that can go, you know, be a definitive threat as a secondary target, and you know, doesn't mind, you know, doesn't get diva. You know, that's one thing I'll give him. You know, there's no, you know, why am I not getting the ball? You know, he did have a comment in the offseason about, well, they, you know, if 1,000 yards is what the team wanted me to get, then the coaches would make sure I got 1,000 yards, which I think there's something to that, right? Quantity of targets. Mm-hmm. But, you know, a lot of your ability is based on your availability, and there's not much availability with Sammy. And, you know, there's no doubt they overpaid 3 years, $48 million for him when they originally signed him. He took a discounted deal, knocked $7 million off, and, you know, he had a chance with incentives to make that back. And I think everybody knew he wasn't going to get that done. So, you know, they took $7 million off that deal this year. And you know, he's been, nobody complains because they won a championship, right? And not every contract is going to be absolutely efficient and perfect. You're going to overpay in some places. It's why you got to get production from a fourth round pick like L'Jarius Sneed, who's playing like a number one corner. You've got to find those values elsewhere. But Sammy's part of the equation. He definitely makes them a better team. I think they've done a better job of being successful without him this year. And I think there were some anomalies to those numbers, like Eric Fisher being out a lot of the games he was out, and, you know, different guys that kind of contributed to it. But, you know, they're better equipped to play without Sammy Watkins now, but they would certainly still like to have him out there to be able to put full pressure on that Bills defense.
I went back and I watched the Week 6 game last night. And boy, I think Josh Allen just looked super uncomfortable. Now, some of that was Josh had been coming off a bit of a shoulder injury. John Brown was definitely hobbled, there's no doubt. But I thought the Chiefs did a good job of, you know, just kind of maybe frustrating him a bit and keeping everything underneath. This hasn't been a great defense, but they're good enough, right? I mean, they do what they have to do. And Jeff, you can give us maybe a little thumbnail basically on how to maybe attack that defense, Steve Spagnuolo's defense, what they do really well and maybe areas they're vulnerable.
Yeah, I think they're the definition, and if anybody bristles at this, you should just spend your time watching old NFL films and not your current team, because they're the definition of bend but don't break. Right. And I think the reality is with the talent level in the NFL at the skill positions, the quarterback's abilities, the receiver's abilities, the gloves the receivers wear, just the freakish ability to make incredible catches and throw the ball, and then the rules making it so much easier for the offense to move the ball, that is really the mindset you have to have. And we've got four teams. You know, the Chiefs are the lowest scoring team left in the playoffs, which shocks all the Kansas City people when I remind them of that fact. But, you know, it's defense is more like basketball now, right? It's more like NBA defense. No one's winning 104 to nothing in the NBA. Shutouts don't exist. You're going to give up points. The question is, can you get to the red zone and make them threes and not sevens? You know, 4-point plays is what Anthony Hitchens and Steve Spagnuolo calls them. Can you make those 4-point plays to keep them out of the end zone? Can you create some turnovers, right? And if you can get some big negative plays, then you can force the punt. But reality is, offenses are going to move the ball. And I think Steve Spagnuolo in his year out did a great job of really adapting to that, right? There's similarities between him and McDermott. They both link back to Jim Johnson with the Philadelphia Eagles. They were on the same staff together. So there's similar principles in what they do defensively. But I think Spagnuolo has recognized, you know, 30-30 and maybe even 20-20 is yardage that you have to be willing to give up, right? You don't mm-hmm. want to give up the big plays. Force the other team down the field and see if they will make a mistake. But where he's really good, what they do a great job of, is back in their secondary. They've got four corners. I mentioned L'Jarius Sneed, the fourth-round pick this year, who, you know, has been just tremendous for the Kansas City Chiefs. He plays in the slot mostly, but he's not your normal slot corner. He's 5'11", 195. You know, he looks like he could step out on the field and play for Nick Saban at Alabama. He's the prototype guy. And he runs a sub 4.440, which makes you scratch your head and say, well, why was he available? And part of the reason is he bounced back and forth between safety and corner. And the Chiefs have lots of guys like that. Both their safeties, Thornhill and Tyrann Mathieu, both played corner at times in college, but they line up at safeties. They can come up and cover one-on-one, and they're comfortable doing that. They're not out of their element when they do it. Rashad Fenton, Charvarius Ward, both have had a little bit of time at safety in this defense. They're very good. They're very deep at corner. And with guys that are good, maybe not, you know, shut down Stephon Diggs. We're taking him out of the game one-on-one. L'Jarius Sneed, go get him. They're not that kind of guys, but they can line any of them up on L'Jarius Sneed, and they don't really lose anything. So they can show you the same look down after down and really be doing something very different because of the versatility of everybody. So their strength, never mind the fact that they're paying two guys up front over $20 million each, really their strength is in the back, right? It's in that secondary. That's where they're really good. And I think if there's a weakness, it's that they have not been getting pressure. Frank Clark has had a really disappointing season after they gave up a first and a third and a $100 million contract to him going into last year, kind of like Watkins. Not a lot of complaints, but he's definitely being overpaid. Mm-hmm. The championship kind of erases, you know, any stink that would be there for that contract. Chris Jones doesn't have the 14 sacks that he had last year, or maybe 2 years ago, I think it was. He doesn't have that sack total, but the pressure numbers are still there. He's the second best interior pass rusher to Aaron Donald. It's by a wide margin. He's closer to third than he is first, but he is, you know, very, very good on the inside. And that's the guy. Mitch Morris and everybody on the inside for the Bills will have to account for him. Frank Clark has been very ordinary on the other side. The rest of the defensive line are really, frankly, just jags. They're guys that know their role, do their job. They will stand up the offensive line. They will protect their gaps. They'll do a good job. And the linebackers are also solid. So, like, how would I attack them? You know, 2 years ago, the Packers victimized them with the running backs out of the backfield. We've seen tight ends get to him. Dan Sorensen is a very good player. Again, very versatile, kind of an in-the-box safety that really mostly plays linebacker in your passing downs. But he's not the world's greatest athlete. So he can be beaten. He can beat you because he's super smart. But athleticism-wise, he's not the best. I'm surprised that more teams haven't really focused on getting the running backs and the tight ends the ball in the passing game. That, to me, is where they're not real athletic. Willie Gay Jr. was drafted to shore that up in the second round as a linebacker out of Mississippi State. And you can see the athleticism. It jumps off the screen when he's in the game. He's not practicing. He's got a ankle sprain and didn't play last week and didn't practice yesterday, so I don't expect him to play. Anthony Hitchens is a smart linebacker that gets him in position, but he's not very good in coverage. All their linebackers really grade poorly in coverage. So to me, if I were going to attack him, it would be a steady dose of Singletary catching the ball out of the backfield. Let's put pressure on that middle level of defense of the Kansas City Chiefs and see if we can't move the ball that way. Knox, the tight end, would be heavily featured in the game plan for me. And then if you can bring them up, you know, get the safeties, get Tyrann Mathieu and Juan Thornhill having to get incorporated in that, then I would start taking my shots down the field. I would work backwards from the way the Bills like to work. And I would be real leery of the blitz because Spagnuolo doesn't bring it all the time, which is why sometimes they don't get to the quarterback. But when he does, it's been very, very effective. It's amazing. When you see a DB come, they're usually coming untouched, and they create problems. And L'Jarius Sneed had a sack and a couple other quarterback pressures last week against the Browns that were a big part of getting the stops for the Kansas City Chiefs.
Yeah, it's great. Well, you brought up Jim Johnson and Sean McDermott, the same thing. One thing I noticed about McDermott, this started back in the Seahawks game early in the season, DB, late pressure with the DBs. And what you're saying is Spagnuolo can do that too. And it's right. Like they're so good at designing these things and these guys get there. They don't always get there, but big play by Levi Wallace, sacking Lamar Jackson last week on their very first drive. And, you know, that's been something Jordan Poyer and Micah Hyde do the same thing. I think it's a good calling card these days. You know, these offenses are just so good. You can't just straight up do something anymore. You have to find ways to kind of design that. The Bills and McDermott's done the same thing with those DBs coming in late, especially.
Yeah, the idea, you know, the Buddy Ryan 46 defense, it's gone, right? That's done. They've neutralized that. Coming out here in our game plan is to just run the ball and punt because we know eventually we're going to take the ball away at short yardage and we're not going to give anything up. It doesn't exist. And I think the defensive coordinators that have adapted to that, and if you look at the rankings, you know, for the Chiefs defense, you're going to see the run defense in the 20s. You're going to see that the pass defense is up, and I think in the top 10, I think it's 6, 7, 8, somewhere in that range. But just look at how much better they are points allowed than yards allowed. And that's a calling card. Andy Reid's now this year, I think it's finally he's gotten so high in offense that it's hard to be higher, you know, in points allowed and points scored. But than it is yards when you're up there in the one or two range. But, you know, every year that he's been here, they basically are better in points than yards on both sides of the ball. And I think that speaks to one of the great, absolutely not getting credit enough is Andy Reid's game management. You know, he's been called a moron for it. And in reality, he's one of the best. He just didn't have a Hall of Fame quarterback to execute everything to the highest level. Now he does. And people are seeing the way he manages the game. And the defense, I think Steve Spagnuolo is the same way. He knows what yards are important. And he'll give up the ones that aren't to make sure that he keeps as many points off the board as he can. And he doesn't go play hero ball with his defense, trying for a shutout. He knows that they're going to give up some points. Let's make sure we just minimize it. We don't have to have a shutout because the offense is going to go score 30-plus points. Patrick Mahomes lost 9 games, right? In 8 of them, the opponent had to get to 31 points to beat him, right? And they didn't. It wasn't 31-3. It was 31-30. He lost 44-41 to the Patriots on a Sunday night game, 54-51 to the Rams. If you're going to beat the Chiefs, you're going to have to score points. And then that shouldn't scare the Bills. They're one of the best at doing it, so they can play that game. I think it's two teams that are very similar. Neither one of them are going to pound the rock, but they'll run when it's there. Mm-hmm. Both of them have great quarterbacks. Both of them will push the ball down the field. But I think both defenses are built upon playing the game that they need to play to go with their offense. So, you know, I think you're looking at two of the smartest organizations in football. I know the guys at Pro Football Focus rave about the Bills organization top to bottom, that they just love what they do. And I think both these organizations are really smart and are really good at being ahead of the curve of where the game is going. You don't hear them preaching, you know, we got to establish the run, we got to do this or that. You know, they talk about, you know, the advantages you need to have to win in the modern game of football. And I think that's why this game is, you know, I know everybody's focused on Brady versus Rodgers. Well, we may be watching the future Brady versus Rodgers and Mahomes versus Allen, but also these organizations, to be honest with you, both these coaches are frankly better than the coaches that are going to be on the NFC side. I think both organizations are better than both organizations on the NFC side. It's too bad these two teams can't play in the Super Bowl, because I think these are actually the two best teams. They're certainly the two best organizations that are left in this tournament.
Interesting. Yeah, and I agree with you about the organizations, and I don't think there's any coincidence that one has Andy Reid and the other has their coach that came from Andy Reid's tree. I mean, you know, he's been great over the years. Seren Petro, sports talk host, 810 HWHB AM in Kansas City, joining me here on the South Sports and Stuff podcast. Two more questions, then we got something cool we want to share with everybody. I agree with you, by the way, about the running backs. Singletary, the very first play of the second half in week 6, the Bills threw a screen past him. He went for 13 yards. I couldn't believe they didn't go back to it. They never really did. Dan Orlovsky tweeted the same thing today. He said, I think Devin Singletary could play a really big role. But anyway, just a comment on that. But here's the question. What's up with the Chiefs' red zone and goal-to-go defense? Because they rank, you know, near the bottom in the league. When they get down there, is it just, you know, basically not being able to match up personnel or the physicality of once you get inside that area? What is that?
Right. And so, like, I think that's one. It's real, okay? It's real. Like the Chiefs aren't really, you know, short yardage running. They're non-existent. They've got a bunch of, like, on the offensive side of the ball, that's one of the stats that gets brought up. It's like, you know, why don't they just run it in? Because they suck. They've got a bunch of offensive tackles that were, you know, drafted to pass block. And so when they try to bulldoze somebody, they don't do it, right? You can't be good at everything, right? You're a coach, right? If you know, reps are the most important thing you've got in anything you do, right? But also, you've got to coach to your strengths. And, you know, on offense, they don't run the ball well. On defense, listen, they're designed to, you know, sit back and make big plays and create takeaways in that secondary. That's how they're designed. And I think there's a little bit that they are vulnerable at times. But I think the bigger picture on that is it's a little bit of white noise. Number one, there aren't many red zone trips, right? They do a pretty good job of limiting you of getting into the red zone. That's one of the things that doesn't get talked about. People talk about the percentage, but they don't talk about the quantity of times that teams are actually down there. So I think that's an important one. And then I think there are a lot of, oh, by the way, scores. Look, they won 14 games for a reason. We're not talking about trying to figure out, okay, the reason they only won 2 games is because they can't stop anybody when they get to the 20, right? They're still winning games. And I think they play the score. And like I said, the Bucs game, they were up, I want to say 17 points going into the fourth quarter. Ended up having to, I think, get a first down as an offense to keep them from getting the ball with a chance to take the lead. But, you know, they gave up points. I mean, I think they were playing against the clock. And I think that's the thing that we're waiting to see. Do we see that, okay, like we talked about earlier, they're doing what it takes to win games to get to where their season's ultimately going to be measured. That's in the postseason. And do we see them flip a switch? Are there things that they've left on the shelf that they can bring out that will make them more effective? You know, I think there is, you don't like to see that because habits are created. And if you're getting into a habit of when teams get close of giving up touchdowns, that's not good. So it is an issue. The Chiefs are very much aware of it. Andy Reid answers that question on a semi-regular basis. Steve Spagnuolo does, you know, on coordinator day, answer that question on a regular basis. But I wouldn't put too much into that. I think it's more an anomaly than it is, you know, a glaring weakness that, if we can just get to the 20, then we're cruising in. I don't think it's that easy.
All right. Great point on that. Now, the last question is just on special teams. And if you can kind of, you know, give us a little, you know, briefing on what to expect there, because there was an extra point miss and that happens. But I know here we have a rookie kicker. He's had an outstanding season. The kid's been money. He broke the all-time Bills single season record, Tyler Bass, for points, but he is a rookie and it is the AFC Championship game. So I think people, whenever he runs out there, you know, you're like, okay, and you hold on to the chair. Andre Roberts, one of the best in the business in the return department as well. So I think people kind of, you know, look to that to maybe here or there give the Bills an edge in some sort of way to maybe get field position or a big play. What about on the Chiefs side of things?
Yeah, Butker missing the extra point. He missed a field goal as well. And you know, that kind of contributes to what I was talking about. But I think that Browns game was about ready to get out of hand when Patrick Mahomes went down. It could have been 23-3 at one point. But they left 4 points. And that was a problem. You know, mid-season, Butker got into a rut where he was missing extra points. And people tried to say, well, it's only extra points. Like, that's just coincidence, guy. That's not a thing that he's just decided he's going to miss the one-pointers. He was still hitting the field goals.
He did here, by the way, too. Week six, he missed an extra point here in Buffalo with week six.
Yeah, and that was part of that stretch. And he was into about a three-game rut to where he was really having problems. And they started, like, instead of centering the ball, putting the ball on the hash mark, he said, you know, field goals are usually on the hash mark. I'm used to that, like right in the middle. You always hear about, well, they want to get the ball center for the kicker. You know, he was kind of tinkering around that was maybe the problem, is that he actually, you know, the angle is better because that's what he practices more, because it's supposed to be harder. He came through that and was kicking very well, and then it reared its head again this past week. It took several weeks for him to get back on track. So that could be a giant part of this game. He is one of the best, and I think one of the things that's maybe got him off track is he's got an incredibly strong leg. And, you know, he's made 80 yarders in practice. And so I think that's one of the things he really wanted to do. He's a tremendous worker. And in the offseason, he wanted to increase his distance. You know, he came in to the league on the Panthers practice squad, known as a guy who had distance but no accuracy. The Chiefs grabbed him off the practice squad. He worked with Dave Tobe, and immediately he was much more accurate than we thought he was going to be. You saw the distance on the kickoffs, but he wanted to add that distance. And I wonder if, by going for distance, he didn't lose some of the precision that was there. And so that is definitely something to watch in this game. I think the other thing is, though, Dave Tobe is the greatest special teams coach that has ever lived. And that may sound like hyperbole, but go look it up. Look at Football Outsiders. Look at the people that measure the metrics of special teams. And there was a story that came out, I think, 1 or 2 years ago, where of the top 20 special team seasons, I think Dave Tobe had coordinated 6 or 7 of them, 7 of them, and he had done it for 3 or 4 different teams, right? He had done it with the Eagles, the Bears, the Chiefs, and maybe it was 3. So wherever he goes, he has great special teams. They return kicks better than anybody, right? And he's done it with, it's not just, you know, he had one great returner. He did in Chicago. I forget the guy's name who has the record or was close to the record, Devin Hester. He had Devin Hester, but in Kansas City, he's had, you know, probably at least a dozen guys return kicks for touchdowns. Mm-hmm. And so they're excellent in the return game. They're very smart when it comes. Their coverage units are great. They do have a rookie punter in Townsend who's not as good directionally as Dustin Colquitt, the old veteran, was, who, by the way, is back on the practice squad. He's not as good directionally at pinning teams down inside the 10, but he has a big leg, and so he can kick them out of some problems. They are a very good special teams unit. It's a place where they've won games. And so the kicker is certainly a question mark with the season he's had. But the rest of the special teams, you're going to have a day against Dave Tobe's special teams, or they're going to gain an advantage on you in the return, in the coverage departments, because they're top shelf at that.
Seren Petro, 810 WHB in Kansas City. We go back a long way. We've shared a few meals and a few drinks here or there back at the Syracuse University days. I know you got some great places to eat there. We got some great places and things to put on your meals here. I know I'm on the radio a lot talking about my country sweet sauce, but you came up with a great idea. So let's get a little bet here. Tell everybody what your idea was, because I'm down for this.
All right, so we were going to go, Joe's Kansas City Barbecue is largely considered by many people the best barbecue in Kansas City. And I always say, if you're 8th best in Kansas City, you're no worse than 9th best in the world. Like, we take great pride in our barbecue. But Joe's started, first it was a championship competition barbecue team. They decided to open a restaurant. It was in a gas station at 47th and Mission, and that store is still there with the gas station. right? That's in awesome. The back. Now they have two beautiful other locations that they own, not franchised, owned by them. They are very meticulous about their products and what they have. It's the best barbecue around. You can order it if you want, joeskc.com. That's where you can go online, and they'll send it to you. And it's amazing how they ship and keep the quality so high. But they are the iconic place. Bands come to town and play Sprint Center, they go to Joe's in the gas station. Baseball teams come to town, you know, the teams that come in that have a little time, they go to Joe's. It's the iconic barbecue. And we thought, okay, let's make a little wager. We'll go, you know, best versus, you know, best for best. Chiefs win, you got to send me some sauce, which, you mentioned. Bills win, I'm going to send you some Joe's Kansas City barbecue sauce. And get some folks set up with some barbecue there in Buffalo.
Oh, that sounds awesome. Let me tell you a little bit about Country Sweet, because it's a one-and-done cooking sauce, basically, is what I say and tell people all the time. So there's mild, there's hot, and there's barbecue. Yes, that's right. You can put it on barbecue, and you can do it with wings. You can do it – I'm not kidding you, Saran. You could like put it on pizza, right? Fries, it doesn't matter. It basically goes with anything. It's a sauce that you can marinate with, you can grill with, you can dip with. It's – totally flexible, like a good football player, right? And the more you can do, as they say in football, the more you could do with Country Sweet. And I've been talking about them for years. They're amazing. They have a restaurant over in Rochester area, but they have this sauce and they can ship it anywhere. And that's what I'm going to do for you if the Kansas City Chiefs beat the Buffalo Bills. You're going to enjoy some Country Sweet. It's my one and done cooking sauce. And my tagline, I have to tell you, it's all about the sauce. That's what it is. It's all about the sauce, Saran. So we got some great sauces here. Barbecue in Kansas City, sauce in Buffalo. So yeah, I definitely look forward to enjoying that. And yeah, man, that tastes good.
I love that because it sounds like it's the Tyrann Mathieu of sauces.
We like to say it's the Jordan Poyer of sauces here, okay? Because he's okay. So versatile. Okay. He can do things. No, definitely. Hey, I look forward to it for sure. So give the website again where people can go check that out online.
Yeah, joeskc.com, right? It's Joe's Kansas City Barbecue, and you'll see it. They've got all their stuff there. They're phenomenal. And if you ever make it to Kansas City, you got to go and make the pilgrimage to the original, right? I've got one of the fancy restaurants right by my house, so that's where we go as a family. But you have to go to the iconic location, the gas station. They're also voted number one fries in Kansas City. Their side dishes are amazing. They have chili. They have, you know, it's just incredible food. And so, listen, much love. I love upstate New York.
Yep.
You know, having gone to Syracuse and everything. So, and I think it's great to have the Bills back. I mean, congratulations to Bills fans. And it's great to see one of the best fan bases in football, you know, have a team that's worthy of them, right? Worthy of the great passion of the Bills fans. So, either way, everybody's a winner. And hopefully, we're talking about a lot of these games. Bills Chiefs ends up being, the new Brady Manning is now Allen Mahomes. Because I think it's two great fan bases that have deserved this kind of success for a long time.
Yeah, I agree. By the way, countrysweet.com, there's lots of great recipe ideas there. It's the red label. That's what you look for when you go to your local grocery store. There's lots of places and locations you can buy that. I've said this from the days that I was back in Syracuse taking a Greyhound bus back for the home games at then Rich Stadium. I say it now as a professional broadcaster. I'm not saying it just because you're on this with me. Kansas City Chiefs fans have always been the nicest and gracious people. I've been around all the fans all around the country, all around the NFL, and I got to tell you, they really are. And you know, you can always get a fan base, a person here or there, people who spoil it, like we have here in Buffalo for sure, for everybody. But man, you know, I was so happy for you guys in Kansas City last year to finally have that moment. I hope that the Bills and their fans can have it this year. You guys had it last year, but it really is. I think this is two of the nicest, best, most gracious fan bases that you can find.
No doubt, no doubt. Either way, I know who I'll be rooting for. It'll be the AFC team, whether it's mine or yours. That's definitely going to be the rooting interest when we get to the Super Bowl.
All right, Saran. Thanks, buddy. And of course, Saran Petro, you can hear him on WHB AM in Kansas City. You can follow him at Saran Petro online. Thanks, buddy. Appreciate it. And always enjoy your time.
Absolutely. My pleasure. Thanks for having me, Sal.
Yo, it's Jay Uso from WWE.
And I'm Jimmy Uso.
Chumba Casino and WWE are hyped for the biggest event of the summer,
SummerSlam.
I know, I can't wait.
There's nothing better to do while we're waiting
than playing Chumba Casino.
Sign up today and you could win a VIP experience
with Chumba Casino and WWE for SummerSlam.
So what are you waiting for?
Play Chumba Casino and enter for your chance to win.
Let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See T's and C's. 21 plus. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
Hey, what's up, Flies? This is David Spade.
Dana Carvey.
Look, I know we never actually left, but I'll just say it. We are back with another season of Fly on the Wall.
Every episode, including ones with guests, will now be on video. Every Thursday, you'll hear us and see us chatting with big-name celebrities.
And every Monday, you're stuck with just me and Dana. We react to news, what's trending, viral clips.
Follow and listen to Fly on the Wall everywhere you get your podcasts.